For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
Taxes was feeling so stuck. Sitting in traffic, squeezing into a parking spot, all to squeeze in getting tax help during your lunch break. Now Taxes is a TurboTax expert who does your taxes for you, while you go about your day getting real-time notifications about their progress and the most money back guaranteed. Now this is Taxes, Intuit TurboTax. Get an expert now on TurboTax.com. Only available with TurboTax Live Full Service, real-time updates only in iOS mobile apps. See guarantee details at TurboTax.com/guarantees.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
O'Reilly.
Check engine light on? Take the guesswork out of your check engine light with O'Reilly Veriscan. It's free and provides a report with solutions based on over 650 million vehicle scans verified by ASE certified master technicians. And if you need help, we can recommend a shop for you. Ask for O'Reilly Veriscan today.
O'Reilly Auto Parts.
The Batteries Included podcast is brought to you with United Chargers and their Grizzly range. The next generation of Grizzly is here. Meet the Grizzly Ultimate, the most powerful AC level 2 charger for home use. With a maximum current of 80 amps, that's 19.2 kilowatts, your vehicle could be charged up to twice as fast as a standard level 2 and up to 15 times faster than a level 1. And of course, it's Wi-Fi connected, so you can take control of your home charging, view stats, set a charging schedule, take part in demand response programs, and control your charger remotely. And that joins the lineup alongside the original Grizzly Classic, the Grizzly Duo, designed to charge two vehicles at the same time, the Grizzly Mini, a portable charging station, and the Grizzly Smart, a revolutionary smart EV charger. Those chargers can adjust the current from 16 amps up to 40 amps, that's 9.6 kilowatts. Plus, the Grizzly Ranger IP67 rated, built in Canada, and with the highest quality materials, you can order yours right now. Go to unitedchargers.com, that's unitedchargers.com.
Well, hello and welcome to the Batteries Included podcast. It is Friday, March 21st, episode 80. Today, we're talking about BYD's Super E platform and megawatt flash chargers. Also, the debut of the Renault 5 Turbo 3e. Honda and Acura owners getting supercharger access and much, much more. I'm your host, Martin Lee, from the EV News Daily podcast. Joining us today is the oh-so-authentic, accept no substitutes, Mr. Tom Mologany, senior editor at Inside EVs and host of the YouTube channel State of Charge. We also have Dominic Yoni, longtime EV journalist and host of the YouTube channel Drive Electric with Dominic. And some big stories this week. But Tom, we'll start with a couple of things that you've been up to and some videos from you. Sometime last week, Ford finished delivering 140,000 adapters. Now, these go from J3400 NACS to the CCS, because, you know, the Ford vehicles until now have been made with CCS. That's what they promised to all Ford owners. Now, this week you spoke with Ford's Director of EV Charging and Energy Services, Ken Williams, along with Chris Maywald as well, the CEO of Electron, about how they worked together to make the adapter, not been without some hiccups. So what's been the story in terms of suppliers, some from Tesla, some from Electron, and what can you tell us?
Yeah, so one of the things we learned from the interview that Ford had never released, and neither has Electron, was that as of January 1st, Ford had delivered 61,000 adapters. And from January 1st to basically last week, they added another 80,000 were shipped out because the total was about 140,000. So that shows you the difficulty that Ford had with getting a supply of adapters. It's not like they didn't want to ship them out. It just, they couldn't get them. And that's funny. If you're watching the video on YouTube right now, I don't know if you could go back for like a 5 seconds, Martin.
What was that bit?
There's an editing mistake on my video, which of course everybody reminded me in the comment section. So you'll see me talking, and all of a sudden a little script will come up and it'll say your text here.
Oh no.
So yeah. So of course, you know, that like it's funny. Everyone has to bring that up. But even the healthiest golden retriever has to be taken to the vet once in a while.
Absolutely.
But So we learned that Ford had a serious supply problem. And when this whole started last year, Ford announced that they were going to be giving their adapter away for free to any Ford EV owner that raised their hand to a certain time limit. They appeared to be overwhelmed with the number of people that agreed to do it. And I don't know why it was such a surprise, but Ford genuinely says they didn't expect as many people that did to raise their hands. Tesla was making the adapter at the time, the NACS adapter. They were the only one that was supplying Ford with the adapter. And Ford immediately realized Tesla couldn't supply nearly the amount of adapters that they needed. So very shortly after they got supercharger access, they began a search for, well, who can make this adapter? They came across Lectron. Lectron is probably the biggest company that makes EV charging adapters. There's a lot of companies out there. Some of them are good. Some of them aren't so great. But Lectron has been a known quantity for a long time. So Ford said, we think basically it wasn't necessarily the product that Lectron had, which was their Lectron Vortex adapter. They were making an adapter. It wasn't necessarily the adapter that Ford liked a lot. It was Lectron's manufacturing capability. And they said, we need so many of these. We need a partner that can make them at a pace that nobody else can. And we'll engineer the damn thing. We'll tell you what to build, but you need to build it. And that's why they selected Lectron over, say, A to Z or some of the other companies out there that make adapters. So that was something that we learned in this interview that we didn't know before. It was basically they needed a partner that they knew could build a quality adapter to their specifications and build them fast enough. So you could see this video that Ford put out. The Ford NACS adapter is really completely redesigned. It looks very similar to the Lectron adapter. This is the Lectron adapter here. And this is the Ford adapter. So, I mean, you would look at them and say, oh, yeah, Ford just made some tweaks. It's much, much, it goes much deeper than that. Even the plastic used for the front edge here where it connects into the CCS port, Ford had Lectron use a completely different material here because in their view, the one on the Lectron adapter couldn't withstand drive over tests of, you know, a 7,000 pound truck, you know, that needs to drive over it like six times or something. I think the test was. So they actually even made them use different plastic. The tab on the top is different because that seems to be a weak point. If you drop an adapter or something, boom, right on the tab. So they it's a different locking tab. And then the interlock pin on the inside, which we've already talked about. So if the adapter is tethered to a vehicle, there's no way it could be removed without pressing the button to release it. Now, if the Lectron adapter is working properly, the regular one, it shouldn't be able to be released either. But that's just an extra level of security so that you really can't, under almost any circumstance, wouldn't be able to pull it out of the vehicle while it was hot. So, yeah, so we learned some stuff there. And, you know, it was interesting to me that in like 9 months, Ford was only able to deliver 60,000 adapters. And then in the last 2 months, 80,000. So, wow. You know, Tesla's not an adapter manufacturer. So, you know, it's understandable that they couldn't deliver the amount of adapters that Ford needed. And don't forget, they were supplying them to other companies too. So, you know, I don't know what behind the scenes happened with with Tesla. And I even asked Ken, you know, did Tesla not deliver the amount of adapters they promised? But he's going to dance around that and say, you know, that's a great part. You know, Tesla's a great partner, which, you know, they have been, and to Ford. But so there was a breakdown somewhere that, you know, Ford, I don't think Ford would have made this announcement. We're going to give all these adapters away for free. Just go to the website and check on it. If they realized it would take them a year to get all the adapters out, which is what it ended up taking them. So good partnership. This new Ford engineered adapters are a great adapter. And I give Ford a lot of credit for, you know, making them re-engineer the adapter to a much higher standard. Like Lectron's adapter would comply with UL 2252 standards as far as durability, egress, water intrusion, you know, voltage, and all that stuff. So that in itself would be UL certified once, and UL actually 2252 just this week got formalized. So it now adapters can actually get certified by that that standard. I got an email from the standards body saying it's been done, it's been formalized. UL 2252 is here now, so these companies can submit their adapters for testing finally. But Ford, that wasn't good enough, and that's what Chris says in the interview, that Ford viewed UL 2252 as a baseline, like that's the bare minimum that we want our adapters to be able to comply with, but it's got to be even better. So that I think it went well. I think we learned some stuff there, and it was good to see the two companies talking together about how they co-engineered this.
What do Ford owners do if they say break their adapter? Can they just go buy the Lectron one, or do they have to go via Ford and Ford will have Lectron make one and then sell it to them? Can you buy one from Ford? What's the deal with that?
Yeah, Ford's selling these on their website. These are the Ford adapter, and Ford has the IP for this. Like, Lectron cannot sell the Ford adapter.
Oh, okay. That's what I was going to ask. Like, did Lectron just say, "Well, we'll just have that design and call it Vortex"?
Yeah, that's what I asked them.
But it hasn't got the Ford logo, the Ford logo on it.
Yeah, I asked Chris that. He said, "No, we're not allowed to."
Oh,
Ford owns that adapter.
No, that's crazy.
You know, but Chris reiterated, our adapter is completely safe. We stand by it. It's going to pass UL 2252. You know, Ford just wanted something that was at a higher level, and and he said, I applaud. It was very complimentary. Chris was of Ford, which he should be. You know, they're a great customer of his now. You know,
yeah.
But Ford also reiterated that they only want their customers using adapters that they provided. So, you know, without coming out and saying, because Chris is in the same room, like, yeah, you can't use his adapter on our cars. That's what they were saying. They only want an adapter that's supplied by them, either the Tesla one that they were shipping originally, they're no longer selling Tesla's adapter, or this one here.
But you can't. So the Lectron Ford, the Lectron made Ford adapter is an OEM approved adapter in Tesla's eyes. The Lectron Vortex, made by the same company, different design, is not an OEM approved adapter in Tesla's eyes.
Correct.
Right. Okay.
Right.
So if something goes wrong, there's a question of liability there, which is interesting.
Right. But which I've said all along, you know, and you guys know me, I typically err on the side of caution and safety. The Lectron adapter and the A to Z adapters are very well made adapters. Could something go wrong? I suppose. But then you have the situation where, let's say something did go wrong. There's almost no way to prove that you're using that adapter. You know, unless there's somebody there videotaping you and sent to Ford, they can't identify which adapter's being used, either the charger or or the vehicle does not know what's in between the plug and the charge port. So unless you're dumb and you say, "Oh yeah, that was me. Yeah, I bought one of those those non-approved adapters," you know, I'll cover the cost. Even if there was some sort of a problem, it's highly unlikely, I think, that 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 you really, it could be proven that that's what you used.
Yeah. Different, a different kettle of fish to home charging. You know, if you have a home charger that is faulty and ultimately damages your car, then that's on you because you bought it. Talking of home chargers, you reviewed a very new and affordable, 40 amp home charger. It's the Watt Saving Level 2. It's $199. What? How did this score with you?
Yeah. So, mixed bag. It did okay on the charger rater. It did because, you know, the charger rater and that charger rater wasn't designed to offer like a final score. It was designed to give me a score based on merit of how it did in the testing and also price wise and safety wise. But then I always average in my own personal score because there's things that I can't factor into the charger rater, you know, that accurately from charger to charger. So it scored an 83 on the charger rater, which is the lowest score that the charger rater has given in a while. Which translates to like a 4.15, I think, score. And then I gave it a 2.75 score. And it averaged over with like 3.45 out of 5 was the final score. Yeah. It actually seems like a well-made unit.
Where have they saved some money then? Because $199 is a killer deal.
That's why I reviewed it, because a lot of times I don't review the lower priced units that aren't safety certified. I don't want to even waste my time with it. These reviews take me a long time to do. And I don't even want to bother reviewing junk, to be honest with you. But I do have a lot of people asking me, would you review some low-cost chargers just to see how they hold up and compare to some of the other units? So I picked this one because this company, Watt Saving, it's actually a big company in China. They supply original equipment, charging equipment, and even DC fast chargers to like 8 or 9 major OEMs in China, BMW, BYD, NIO, Nissan. So it's not some little fly-by-night company. So I figured it would be a good one to test. And it did okay. There were some shortcomings. The wall mounting bracket is really garbage, and the unit can just pull off the wall. It only comes in J1772. There's no NACS option. It only comes as a plug-in unit. It's not smart charger at all. It's just a quote-unquote dump charger, which is fine. A lot of people like that. It doesn't have a connector holster. It's got little, like just a wall clip to hang your cable up. It passed the tests, but it only has a 2-year warranty, which is really short for charging equipment. And what always scares me when you see these short warranties is that there's a reason why companies don't just nilly-willy say, oh, I'm going to give my unit a 4-year warranty as opposed to a 2-year warranty. They know how they've designed the units and they know how long they're going to last. And the longer they have confidence that the unit will last without having a problem, they can then give a longer warranty. So, 2 years is very short. It's not safety certified, so we don't know what's inside. I actually tried to open it up, but wouldn't open up. I removed the screws on the body, that the only exterior screws, and trying to pull it apart, it will not come apart. So I was just going to break it. So I figured just leave it that way. So it seems, would I recommend it? No. Would I say absolutely do not buy this unit? Well, it's not safety certified, but it seems like it's well-made and it's coming from a relatively good company, and it has an outstanding cold weather cable. The cable did one of the best that I've ever tested in cold weather. Absolutely. I was like giddy with how good it was performing when I was pulling it out of the freezer. I'm like, I can't believe this. I didn't see this coming with this unit. So it's really good if you need to mount it outside.
Excellent. Oh, that's good. It's good to know that the cheaper ones are not just junk, but that you do get what you pay for. If you pay a little bit more, you do get better features, connectivity, you get a bigger warranty, and just a general better build quality. Yeah. I guess if you need to buy a bunch of chargers, then you might think actually even a small saving on one adds up over a bigger purchase. But if you're buying for an apartment block or you're buying a bunch of stuff, you're probably not buying dumb chargers because you want to do some sort of charge management with them. So again, you know, interesting to see that. Really interesting.
Well, interesting, you talked about apartments, Martin. Sorry to cut you off.
No.
One of the features it has, which is good, was RFID access control.
Well, so that's great.
Each unit comes with two little cards. I actually have it right here.
Let's have a look.
It looks like an electric van.
Yeah.
I don't know if you can see that. It's got two.
Yeah, that's cool.
Oh, no, wrong side. This side. See, it has the wheels on this side. And
a little key ring thing. So, and just. Yeah.
So you hold it up against the unit here. There's a little RFID set, and you can put it in access control mode. So now if it is outside in an apartment, you can shut the charger off after you use it.
Great.
And, I like that feature. So overall, I mean, I saw somebody comment, from what I hear for 109, it's okay. Yeah, it actually is. You know, you're taking on that. You're understanding that this hasn't been safety certified. It only has a 2-year warranty, so you might only get 2 or 3 years out of it. But if that's okay for you, then you know, go for it. It's not a terrible unit, and it's $200.
I mean that's not bad, right? Yeah. So let's get into what a week it's been this week. Once again, if you thought that some of the intense feelings were dying down, and if anything, they've sort of been ramped and ratcheted up, everything from peaceful protests against Tesla, of course, aimed at its CEO. I had a fantastic email this week, a complaint email to my podcast saying, "You hate Tesla." Because I don't hate Tesla. I have no feelings. I don't own Tesla stock. I've never owned the vehicle, but I might do one day. I have like zero feelings about Tesla. They're like, "You do, you hate them. I hear it in your voice." I'm like, "I genuinely don't." And then they replied again, "You hate Elon Musk." And I replied back, right. That's your point. If you idolize this person, and that's cool. I was reading the comments of the Joe Rogan interview that Elon Musk did. And there's, by the way, plenty of people in the world that think these guys are rock solid, super cool idols. As I replied to this complainant, because we were having, I thought it was an interesting, it was a good argument. It was robust, I would say. His feelings seemed a little hurt, poor snowflake, but I thought it was a good, robust argument. And he was like, "You hate Elon." I'm like, "I don't hate him, but I'm frustrated that cars and politics are being tied together." And he hasn't replied since anyway. But I was saying, look, it's cool. We all don't have to think the same. Like, millions of people love that Joe Rogan interview and absolutely idolize Elon Musk. That's cool. We can all think different. But I'm like, you've hit a point here that actually I disagree, disagree.
So we do this.
Oh. We're back.
Okay.
So that wasn't a one-off thing. There's something going on over in Martin's studio.
Yeah, I think he said something about his Mac or something. He's having issues with running it. Runs into issues with it. I don't know.
Kyle for making him buy a Mac.
Right. So just to pick up on where he left off, though. So I had this little spiel kind of worked out because I wanted to address this issue. So, you know, we haven't really talked a lot about this in the past. We want the show to focus on mostly on vehicles and the companies that make them. Hey, Martin, you're back.
I'm back. So yeah, that was all leading into saying that this is not, let me finish, because you might think that's just a rant. And honestly, it wasn't a rant. I had a very good point. Let me finish. The point is, none of this is the fault of the people who buy and drive the vehicles. So they didn't ask. They didn't ask to be inserted into politics. They just want to drive an awesome, awesome vehicle. And I feel very, very sorry for anyone who has either had a comment made towards them because of what people perceive as to be one person being a company. And my point being, one person is not a company. One person might take a step back. They might decide not to do that job anymore. That one person, you know, they're very high profile leaders. One day Mark Zuckerberg won't run Facebook, and you know, Steve Jobs sadly passed, and Apple's value has increased, you know, over the decades. And so one person doesn't make a company. And I felt very angry that this person thought that I was conflating my frustration with a single individual with a company, which breeds me onto, thank you for letting me finish my point, Dom, of the three of us here, you are a Tesla owner yourself. And I was curious to know if you had even had, you know, obviously I don't want people giving you the finger or whatever just because you drive a Tesla or saying you know, horrible comments to you, but even like friends or anything say to you, like, oh, you know, how do you feel driving it? Like, fine, I feel fine driving the car. Or has it affected you? So as a Tesla owner and Tesla driver, Dom, can you tell us, like, where are you at with owning and driving a Tesla, given this very high state of feeling, particularly in the US and Canada?
I mean, so I'm in Tallahassee, Florida, and things seem kind of calm here. I don't know. I haven't seen any, you know, I suppose it's possible someone could come by and, like, you know, scratch my paint or whatever. And I don't know what to do about that. You know, if the damage is bad enough, I can make an insurance claim. It's like fully insured. Like, maybe they could do me a favor and, I don't know, push it into a lake or something. I don't know. I haven't really seen or experienced any sort of animus because of what I drive. It's, you know, and right. And I don't really expect to. It's kind of a shame that it's not great. So I had prepared this like little spiel that I was like starting to let go here. And I'll just kind of jump back into that. So I was just saying that haven't really talked about this on the show a lot. Because we want it to be mostly focused on the vehicles and the companies that make them. But as most of everyone is aware, there are now like organized protests outside of dozens of Tesla stores in the US, and some of them have like hundreds of participants. You know, it's like it's all being organized pretty nicely. Now as EV advocates, this kind of sucks because we're all about encouraging EV adoption and reducing combustion cars as much as possible. So protests outside the stores are like the largest seller of EVs. The company that's done more to, you know, popularize EVs than any other. It's like a terrible thing to have happening. But that said, I get it. You know, people aren't protesting against EVs, but rather like the CEO of the company, Elon Musk. And that's fine. This is America. People are allowed to peacefully demonstrate. It's one of the things that makes America great. What's not fine, though, is like some people taking out their frustration and anger with Musk by committing like acts of vandalism, sometimes against Tesla-owned buildings or vehicles, sometimes against superchargers, and sometimes against privately owned vehicles. Like, this is wrong, obviously, and extremely stupid. and it needs to stop. Like, it's ridiculous. For one thing, so these actions are used to smear legitimate protesters. They take away from the message that so many are giving up their time and efforts to make. And besides all that, vigilantes like are the biggest victim will be of their actions themselves. So they're getting caught. They're getting criminal records. They're making their own lives ahead like so much more difficult with all that. And they're putting themselves at physical risk. This is America. A lot of people, even people you would never suspect, are armed. They have like guns, but, you know. And I worry if this continues, you know, someone's going to get shot, and that's obviously not great. So legal protest is the best and most effective way to make your point. So, you know, if you disagree with the CEO of Tesla, you can still, you know, to protest in a legal and safe way. And there's lots of venues, organizations you can work with to, you know, facilitate that kind of thing. But finally, if you're going to sell your Tesla because you don't want to be connected to that brand in any way, I just mentioned this at the end, that's fine. I mean, there's a lot of that going on. It's kind of wild. But do us all a favor and just replace it with another EV, you know? And that's really all I had to say about that. You know, thank you for coming to my TED Talk.
Thank you for preparing words.
And don't forget, there are so many wonderful people that work at Tesla. You know, so many thousands and thousands of people that, you know, are working hard and, you know, are the backbone of this American car company, this startup American car company. There's plenty of ways to express your displeasure with the CEO if that's what you have, without harming the lives and the livelihood of the people that work at the company, you know, and especially destroying somebody, other person's personal property, you know, like, that's not hurting Elon if you go key somebody's car or, you know, I mean, it's that's the wrong way to protest.
Right. Yeah. It's very likely a key in the car of somebody who agrees with you on politics and all these things too, right? It's just I feel like the majority of EV owners were kind of like left-leaning and so, you know, are more mostly opposed to Elon. So if you're scratching their cars, you're not, I don't know what you're doing, because your target is should not be, you know, your friend or the people who you agree with. I don't know.
Mm. Do you think the peaceful protesters feel that their messages is sinking in? Like, is it working?
So. Yeah. I mean, I think they're happy with the results. I mean, I haven't really delved deeply into that. You know, I see some posts online, but I haven't really, you know, I'm more worried about the EV news going on that, you know, to get super involved and protest against the company, you know, really.
I suppose there was that Vancouver International Auto Show, which is on this week from the 19th through till Sunday. And they said they asked Tesla multiple times, please don't attend. A bit like, you know, CEOs or managers are often given the chance to resign and not be fired. You know, they've resigned to explore new opportunities. And the guy, he's the chief exec of the Vancouver Motor Show in Canada was like, we just asked them multiple times not to come. And then they'd said they got the message and they cancelled. So I suppose the protesters would say that, the reason given, safety of staff and people attending the motor show. So, you know, there is an event where Tesla would have been marketing and meeting people and showing off their excellent cars. And now they're not going to be at that. Is it the end of the world? No. Will it matter to Tesla? Of course not. But I guess those that are, you know, protesting and these movements might think that things like that are having an effect. Not so sure. And then the perspective from over here in Europe is, of course, slightly different, because it's not our politics and it's not our industry and Tesla isn't ours, although they're in Germany. But no one feels like, you know, like Tesla's an American car company. So we don't have that investment. You know, British humour is slightly weird. Plus, the British have a weird fascination, mainly driven by tabloids, I suppose, over the years, of building people up and knocking them down. So for a long time, we've been building Elon Musk up into this image of a space genius, kind of rocket launching, kind of weird, eccentric, socially awkward a genius billionaire figure, and now the British media is having a wonderful time with themselves taking him down, because that's just what sort of we do. It's kind of a British humor thing. Also, it's kind of a dark side 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 of.
We need to put all these together, Dom, and make a video clip of just Martin freezing up and repeating. We could probably sell that. So that's the dark side. I don't know how much longer we need to stay on this. I think we all agree that you shouldn't be damaging other people's property. If you want to boycott Tesla because you don't like Musk, don't buy a Tesla. If you have one and you can't stand looking at it because you see Elon, sell it. I'm not telling you to sell your Teslas, but if that's how you feel about it, then do it. I mean, you can do what you want. You can vote with your pocket. You could support companies that the management has the same political views that you have. You don't have to do that, but I mean, that's your option. But to damage people's property, to do illegal acts, that's absolutely absurd.
Hey, Martin, I think I'm getting a little bit of a feedback echo from when Tom was talking.
Yeah, I'm not sure I can hear you too well, but I'll let you guys... if you can hear me,
I can
hear you very well.
So it sounds like
trying to work out what's causing my computer to crash, whether it's the mixing desk or the camera, but we'll work that out for next week. I'm sorry about that.
It's all right. All right. Let's talk about some news.
Getting a lot of feedback, Martin.
Okay, apologies. I'll come back and I'll throw this out of the window and dig my Mac out of my PC out of the cupboard if you can hear me.
Okay, I'll talk about BYD while you're gone. He's gone. Hopefully he comes back. But I guess we can talk about a bit of the news. So not a whole lot of big news, like product news on the US side, but this thing happened in China this week, and I think it's huge. So the week kicked off Monday with BYD making this, I think, hugely important debut. the Chinese automaker launched a new platform called the Super E platform, along with two initial vehicles that will use it, the BYD Han L sedan and the BYD Tang L three-row SUV. I think they make it also a plug-in hybrid of this, and the plug-in hybrids are usually like Tang DM instead of L. But so they also debuted a new 1,000 kilowatt DC charger and plans to build out a network of them. So this is huge because for the first time, electric vehicles are charging in 5 or 6 minutes. So this is technology that puts electric vehicles on par with combustion in most respects. Weight is still an issue. But it tells all the other automakers and battery makers that this is now possible. Like, this is, I don't know, I feel like it's like almost a finish line. Like, BYD has, you know, kind of drawn a finish line, and they're kind of like standing on it right now and looking back over the shoulder and seeing where everybody is. So we just have to wait for it to filter to our side of the world. It seems like likely that other markets like Europe will get this before the US does, of course. So a little bit about the platform. It uses BYD's redesigned and upgraded blade batteries with lithium iron phosphate, or LFP, cathode chemistry. It's a 1,000-volt system. So its peak charging power is 1,000 kilowatts, or 1 megawatt. So that's 1,000 volts and 1,000 amps. And so they rate it as a 10C battery, which tells us it should be able to charge in 6 minutes. So BYD says it can add 250 miles of range in 5 minutes. That's CLTC range. So I'm thinking like 200 miles in the US or probably Europe. But, you know, in 5 minutes, 200 miles, that's pretty good. I mean, that's as good as the truck in my garage, I'm pretty sure. I think the energy density in these batteries isn't particularly high, but that's generally the trade-off with high power batteries. You get lower energy density. Another interesting thing about the platform is that it uses a new motor design with record-breaking RPM speeds and a power-to-weight ratio. So it's spinning at over 30,511 RPM. Which is kind of, I think maybe Xiaomi was the leader previously with like 28,000, which is also crazy. You know, it wasn't that long ago when I think Tesla came out with a 20,000 RPM motor, you know, sheathed in carbon motor. So BYD isn't sheathing in carbon. They have other strategies, and they have there's a whole video on Weibo of this whole presentation. It's in Chinese, but you can kind of see the slides in the background, like just how sophisticated this motor design is. It's pretty amazing the way they've done the windings and anchored the magnets inside the mass of the rotor. Right. And the power to weight ratio is, like they say, it's given as 16.4 kilowatts per kilogram, but that works out to, in freedom units, 10 horsepower per pound. 10 horsepower per pound. Do you remember 1 horsepower per pound, Tom? It was like the goal for like the longest time, right?
Yeah, well, times have changed, Dom. You know, we have, two sub-2-second, family cars, you know, whereas, you know, you're thinking the 80s, the top sports cars, you know, broke 5 seconds, you know?
Right.
So,
that was fast.
Times have changed. So yeah, this is something. I don't know.
One little component. So the BYD's 1,000 kilowatt DC chargers are called megawatt flash chargers, which is kind of, I wrote a post for Autoblog Green, maybe in like 2010 or so. I should try to look it up. And I propose using the terminology flash charging for super fast charging. And here it is. It's being done. And I'm like, it kind of makes me a little giddy inside because I'm sure they didn't see the thing I wrote like 13 years ago, whatever it's been. But yeah, it's kind of interesting to see. So in the demonstration, they use what they call dual gun fast charging. So the pedestal has like two different like pistol grip plugs, and you plug them both into the car, and so you can get the full power. Because I think the plugs are the weak link, and maybe they can't handle that much power. It's the Chinese design, the GB. I forget the designation. Sorry?
GBT.
GBT, right. I think they're moving to a new standard there, actually, in the future. But I'm not sure how that's rated, if that's rated for 1,000 or not, or how BYD or how the market's going to do this going forward, you know, because this could eventually become standardized again. So, I mean, I think in here, maybe the NACS standard can handle this. I'm not positive. Yeah. Do you guys know that?
I'm not sure.
Not from the top of my head, like the maximum, if you had two holsters or two plugs, what it would max out at, in terms of the sort of heat management and what have you, I don't know.
Right. But yeah, so, but it's kind of interesting to, you know, to see, okay, they run into a problem and they figure a way around it. It's not the most elegant solution maybe, but it's a solution, right? And 1,000 kilowatts, that's just, I don't know. I just kind of, it's kind of blown away by that news. And it just, it was really exciting for me personally, because I feel like it's a moment in time, you know, we've kind of like arrived finally. I don't know. What do you think, Tom?
I think we've arrived a lot of times. You know, I this isn't the end of the journey. You know, I mean, I remember when NIO came out with the 640 kilowatt charging, they demonstrated it. It was like, oh my God, 640 kilowatt. And then I think it was XPeng came out with an 800 kilowatt. And I was like, oh, you know, this, we're there. You know, is this the end of it, Dom? Of course not. You know, it'll even get faster, you know, which is crazy, but it will. And the batteries will be able to sustain the high power for longer. You know, this is a 10C battery, but that's the peak charging. I think in a video that I saw with it charging from, I don't know, it was like 15%, I think, to 70%. Somewhere right in that range, the average C rate was like 5.5C. So it's not like plug it in, it you get 10C for the whole charging session. But still, that's a nut. That's a crazy to average almost 6C up to 70% is wild. And at the 10C rate, it was averaging like 1.25 miles per second of charging. So that's nuts. You know, it's great. And we're going to just continue to see breakthroughs and advances. And where do we end up? Well, we don't really need to get much faster than this. If you're talking about a 5-minute stop at a DC fast charger and adding 200 miles ish, let's say the CLTC is a little bit more optimistic than, you know, EPA. Let's say it was 200 miles in 5 minutes. That's nuts. I've seen 200 miles in 12 minutes on a Lucid Air, and right around that same time frame with Taycan, which I have this week. I have a Taycan 4 Gran Turismo this week that I just did a range test 2 days ago, and now I'm doing some charging testing. And with the new battery, Porsche says a 10 to 80% charging time in 18 minutes. It used to be 21.5 minutes, which was still wild. But now with a peak charging rate of over 300 kilowatts, up to 320 kilowatts, they've cut it down to 18 minutes. And the battery's bigger now. It's you know, usable capacity is 97 kilowatt hour, where it used to be about 84 kilowatt hour. So bigger battery, faster charging. Kyle's talked a lot about Taycan charging. It's why, you know, he says it's the best road tripper, and, you know, setting, you know, records, you know, cannonball records with it. It's a beast. I will tell you, I did my first recording, the 10 to 80% recording, just yesterday, and it beat Porsche's claimed 10 to 80% in 18 minutes, and it beat it by a lot.
Oh,
which I was really surprised. So, you know, the you know, when you talk about range replenishing rate on the Taycan, even though the new ones are fantastic, and I also will say that I beat EPA with my 70-mile-an-hour highway range test. That video will be out probably early next week. But it beat the EPA range rating, the Taycan did, which they usually do, and it beat it by a lot. It still doesn't have the as long a driving range as, say, a Lucid Air. So when you're adding the time and the amount of power that goes into it. The air is still better for the first charge. Like if you can go down to 0% and charge for 10 or 12 minutes, the air will still give you more miles. But the Taycan will give you more miles throughout the full charging curve and repeatedly. You know, that the only way the air beats the Taycan in miles added per minute is if you plug in at 0%, you know, and charge to 50 or 60%, something like that. And any other race, if you plug in a certain percent state of charge and charge to a certain percent state of charge, the new Taycan beats the air. So it's in my opinion, that makes it a better fast charging EV. But getting back to this BYD battery, this would beat everything. I mean, it would be nearly twice as fast as what we're seeing on the best charging cars, the Air and the Taycan here that we can have. So it's nearly twice as fast, which that's a huge step forward.
I tell you what, that slide I've put on screen there with the, obviously there's the Hanzi written and then there's the English above it. That is probably the starkest image that we can look at as a reminder this is Chinese technology. And my second point being, why didn't an American car maker get anywhere near this? Like, why is this not General Motors saying, hey, we got some battery technology? Right. Why is not Tesla saying, hey, I mean, Tesla said if it's not ready at some point, we'll just buy batteries. They fired the guy who was running the energy battery division, and they seem to make progress, you know, with the new people there. Why is it not Ford saying, hey, we've made some breakthroughs? You know, meanwhile, what they are talking about is, well, you know, the EPA is going to loosen emissions and we're going to carry on making combustion. This does seem like the world is kind of splitting, because we'll get all this in Europe. We'll get all this, but especially in the UK doesn't have tariffs on Chinese cars. So we'll get this. BYD are launching cars in the UK all the time. And Europe just working out, you know, the negotiations of those tariffs for building factories in Europe. And then they'll circumnavigate them. Like, why is... And so somebody asked in the comments, like, what stops an American company from doing this, just copying it tomorrow? Well, I mean, BYD file on average 32 patents a day. Jeez. Right. So where was that article? I did bring it up at some
commitment
point.
Commitment to R&D, basically, it sounds like.
It's not bad, eh? And then I mentioned this before on the podcast, and I think somebody in the comments was like, That's not a fact. You can't, you know, that's just too many people. When I said the BYD have over 100,000 people working in their R&D department. And then when I think I showed this one on screen and they said, that's not what the story says. Well, the story says of December 30th last year, BYD has the most R&D personnel among automakers and 110,000 engineers, according to the CEO. So you can have a look at this story if I just go down. On December 29th, the founder and chairman of BYD, Wang Xiaofu, shared that BYD has 1 million employees, 11 major research institutes, and 110,000 engineers. It's the automaker with the most R&D personnel in the world. Yeah. So I took that as 110,000 engineers working in R&D, and I think our viewer or listener went, no, that's not 110,000 in R&D. I read that as 110,000 people, engineers working in R&D for the business, research and development. And that's more people than the American automakers have in their entire business. These are engineers that are filing 32 patents a day on average. Like, this is, it's a different league. So you say, well, why, you know, why is this not a Mercedes or a BMW or a Ford or a General Motors? It's just lights out for the competition. I don't say that with any glee, by the way. I say it, I'm laughing through incredulity in my voice. I'm not cheering on the Chinese. I just find it, right. it the situation's amusing, just like how bad it is if you're not a Chinese car maker. Look at Xiaomi. They're a gadget maker 5 minutes ago, and they just raised their guidance this year to 350,000 vehicles. This time last year, Xiaomi hadn't delivered the vehicle. They delivered their first deliveries April last year. Mm-hmm. Like, their revenue in Q4 was $2.25 billion in the quarter alone. Invented out of thin air. Still loss-making, that division, by the way. Obviously supported by the Xiaomi mothership. But they halved their losses from Q3 to Q4. Like, this is just... And again, you can talk about, well, what are people getting paid in China? And people are living at the factories, and you see these sites on hundreds of acres, and you see all these buildings on the factory sites that are just these huge tower blocks that people are living in, if not 7 days a week, then Monday to Friday. And, you know, let's not get into all of that. But in terms of the tech that we're here to talk about, like, this is insane, isn't it?
Right. And BYD isn't really, or hasn't in the past, they weren't like a super big innovator. They've been around for, I mean, they did their initial batch of innovation in like the late 90s, early 2000s to get, you know, batteries, or, you know, the battery production. And then they had like the one, I feel like they had like one model of EV, the E6, like for forever. That thing was, you know, but then just recently, like what, 2020 or 2019, just recent, more recently, is like somebody lit a fire under them, and they just started coming up with, you know, a lot more innovation than they had been, you know, the blade batteries and really kind of, you know, because they had Chinese competitors, you know, knocking down on the doors, like with technology, you know, they have, so BYD is primarily, or at least started as a battery company. So now you have CATL in China is now the biggest battery maker. They surpassed BYD at some point, and they've, you know, been the biggest battery maker, and they've got a lot of technological advances under their belt. And I think it's really pushed BYD to, you know, to this, basically, to become like technology. I mean, this, I feel like the Super E platform of these batteries, the fast charging batteries, not like the end all and be all of batteries, because there's a whole lot, you know, to batteries. Is it, you know, the energy density, how fast can you charge, discharge, so many different things, cold, hot weather, behavior, degradation, this, flammability, all those different things, you know, there's so many elements to a battery. I'm not sure this is like the be all and end all of batteries, because it's not energy dense enough, but good enough. And with the charging speed, you know, it's there, basically.
I mean, it does throw a bit of a spanner in the works for one of the arguments of battery swapping, which is,
right,
nothing is quicker than battery swapping. Well, a Neo battery swap's about 8 minutes, and this is a 5 minute charge. Right. I think that video, Tom, that you might have been talking about, that's the one where it hit 10C within 10 seconds of plugging in. Like, plug in, handshake, 10C, boom. Like, oh my gosh.
And by the way, I know I've mentioned it here before, guys, but I have a website that's dedicated to EV charging called evchargingstations.com. And I have a full-time writer now, Mark Kane, came over from Inside EVs. He put an article up about this and embedded some videos of the new battery and charging at 10C. And so that might be, if you're interested in this topic, you just scroll down, Martin, and you'll get to the news feed.
Ah, there we go.
Yeah, right down there.
It's the latest EV news, and we'll find it down there somewhere. So Hyundai, Honda, Acura, and it'll be down here. Because it was a few days ago. BYD Super E platform that Mark has written this for you on. Yeah. EVchargingstations.com, and we'll find out all the details, I'm sure. They talk more videos about it. Ah, some videos on this as well.
We can't play the videos because we'll get dinged for copyright. Yeah. But
will we?
Right.
Oh man. Okay.
Because they're not from the automaker. They're from a news channel.
Oh, so they're independent reviews. Right. Better. Like, no, we can't play them. But
they took the clips from some of them. The clips they took from the Weibo presentation. It's like a video, but on the Weibo site, so you'd have to kind of record that, and then. So I'm not exactly sure how. I don't think we can get away with playing these.
I don't know.
Let's not try. I'm
don't
just
get dinged.
Directing people there to, if they want to see the videos of
charging. Definitely. Yeah, you can go to. Yeah, there's a good link on the bottom of this article, Tom's article on Tom's site, evchargingstations.com. There's a link to the Weibo video, so you at the very bottom of the article.
Okay, so we can go watch that. That's cool. But yeah, this is, you know, it always starts off like all technology at the high end. So they're two new vehicles. And yeah, you need two chargers and, you know, one space, two bits of hardware. But it won't be too long before, you know, seriously decent charging is, you know, just a kind of an everyday thing. Whether that is like, I mean, 5 minutes is ridiculous. Like, whether it's 8 or 10 minutes, that's still, it's a comfort stop, isn't it? That's either a battery swap or it's a comfort stop to charge your EV.
So it's kind of interesting that just this week, NIO and CAT, CATL, the biggest battery maker in the world, NIO has its own. It's really its advantage in the Chinese marketplace has been swapping stations. You know, being able to swap out batteries in 8 minutes, like you say. But they just partnered with like the biggest battery maker in the world to standardize sort of the battery packs and grow a huge network. You know, NIO has a new line of more affordable cars called Firefly, and that's part of the the standard. It's going to be part of that standard, and they're looking at a global network, they say. So I don't think that includes the U.S. at this point, and I don't know if we'll ever, because I don't know, but I'm not sure if this, if I don't think the BYD announcement really puts a spanner in the works, as you might say, Martin. I think there's still room for both concepts, both ways, fast charging and also battery swapping, because with battery swapping, it can allow you to, you could charge, less for your vehicle up front if you don't really, if the person who owns the vehicle doesn't really own the battery and they just own for each time they swap it, and the people and car owners never have to worry about their battery degrading too much, and then they don't also worry about where will we recycle this, because that's all happening in the background. A battery wears out in the system, it gets sent to the recycling at the CATL, turns those minerals back into new batteries. It's like a closed loop. It's pretty elegant. It's an interesting solution. It's a bit capital intensive, but they've got a lot of capital.
I think they're
interesting to see how this plays out. This
the NIO CATL thing, I think they're called Choco Seb batteries. It just sounds like a sweet treat, doesn't it? But let's get on and talk about another little sweet treat that we heard about this week, which is something it's going to be forbidden fruit for the rest of us. But this is, I love this stage of the EV adoption curve, because car makers have the confidence and the bandwidth, that's the word, in order to do just silly stuff that's brilliant. We can show you a modern electric reboot of the legendary Renault 5 Turbo and Turbo 2 of the 1980s. Now, we had seen this back in 2022 as a concept that was doing some hooning around, and we just thought this was a way of getting publicity for the Renault 5. Well, Renault, and of course their Alpine racing division, have gone, you know what, we should make some of these. Going back to the 1980s, they're going to make 1,980 of them. They are going to be, I think, rather special vehicles. I might need to just remove my one from the screen there, Dom, and you can probably add yours back in. So sorry about that. I think we're both screen sharing at the same time. I'll just take mine off. There you go. And then yours seems to be on, which is, look at this thing.
Okay, there it
so this is, anyway, to start. Okay, this is in-wheel hub motors on the rear axle, so rear wheel drive and in wheel motors on this thing. 540 horsepower of in wheel motors, 0 to 63.5 seconds, 4 meters long. They're calling it a mini supercar. 800 volt architecture, 350 kilowatt DC fast charging. Go Renault, go! Go Alpine, I should say. An 80% charge in 15 minutes. Very highly customizable in terms of how you livery this and the interior trim as well. It will arrive in showrooms in 2027. They'll only make 1980 of these. It will begin at £130,000, but they expect them to be nearer 200 grand, because these will be collector's items, and people will, spec them how they want. So not for the rest of us, forbidden fruit, but I love that we have this. So the guys in the comments are saying it's a blank screen and it's not showing. Okay, sorry about
that. Really? I can see it here on ours.
we got very big for a second. I don't like that view. Should we try that? Is that? Can you guys see the car now? Let me put it back
on
the
screen. I turned it off.
Oh, you turned it off.
Different approach.
Yeah. Okay. Different approach. Danny says black screen, and I could see it. I was watching.
Seeing it before.
Oh, that's crazy. Yeah, okay, we'll try and reshare it. So Alpine is the racing bit of Renault, and they're going to look after engineering this. And like I say, it's not going to be, this may never even make it to general sale. It just might be a couple of thousand people who are known to Alpine that get, like Ferraris, that get offered these things if they own one already. And yeah, this is, I mean, can you guys in the comments see?
Yeah, they can see this one.
See this now? Can you see it? Cake says Mac, it just works. I don't know if Dom's on his Mac. Dom is both PC and Mac. No. He's ambidextrous. Yeah. You know what? You're on PC today. that's amazing. Okay, yeah, you can see it now. That's awesome. Thank you for letting us know. Nebula and Wolfie and Damien and the Cord and the rest of you. It's good to know. Thank you so much. It's on screen. So yeah, this is kind of silly and stupid and wonderful and brilliant and fantastic, and we can't really buy it. But I love the car companies are here doing EV stuff like this. What was it? Did I mention the battery? If I didn't, 70?
I'm not sure. 70, yeah.
70 kilowatt hours. So not overly big or small. And, but, you know, 350 kilowatt DC fast charging at peak. And yeah, no rear seats because... channeling the 1980s of just having this brilliant weapon. Oh, and of course, because it's rallying, the vertical handbrake. You can pull on the handbrake.
Stick up there.
Yeah, like a Rally 1 car. Oh, my gosh. This is super cool. I love this. But anyway, kind of pointless, but also brilliant.
Yeah. I like that. Only for the brave. I forget who, Gary Bushy pointed out this or the Rivian R3X, because that's the first thing I thought of, you know, which is a much tamer version. It's not a race car, but I don't know. Right. You know, I think that the R3X might be as much fun to drive even if it doesn't look as cool.
Right. No, when it's hardcore, you'd be able to daily the R3X. I don't know if you want to daily. That looks like, you know, hardcore. Those seats, you know, you're like buckets. You're like, you're wedged into them, basically. It's just... if you see, there's like, you sit down and the sides come up and the bolsters come out, you know, there's no side movement at all. So you can't like lean over and get, you know, there's a one driving position, like you're driving.
Yeah, it is brilliant. Michael says Alpine now needs to do better in Formula One. Win at the weekend and sell in the week. You know, win on Sunday, buy on Monday kind of thing. I'm not sure that happens with cars as much as what have you. But yeah, Alpine's weird. Alpine has always been the spicy bit of Renault, but not sold any. Then they rebranded the Renault Formula One team to Alpine to raise the awareness of it. And now they are going to be... Mercedes-Benz customer next year. So the Alpine, the Renault engines are 2025 is the last year of this kind of regulation cycle. The new regulations 2026. Kind of crazy. They're going to use Mercedes engines, not Renault engines. And so they'll just be a customer team, but still be called Alpine and still try and, yeah, get across that they are this, you know, hardcore fast bit of Renault. Alpine has always been a kind of curiosity to me. I know somebody's got an Alpine. And in fact, he lives near the Renault Formula One factory, in Enstone. And so he says when he drives around, people just wave at him all the time. So they think he works at the Formula One factory, where people, the only people in the area that would have an Alpine road car are like the people who work at the factory. He's like, I don't work there, but people wave all the time. Oh, it must be you from work. All right, let's talk about a couple of other things. Maybe things that we can buy. I don't know, but I'll talk about the Renault. That was a good fun topic. And so let's talk about in June, just in time for summer road trips, Honda and Acura will offer manufacturer approved charging adapter to their customers. This appears, unless Tom's got any insights, to be another Lectron special, and that means Honda and Acura EV owners get this Tesla supercharger access in June, which is really good news. It's been a bit of a slow uptake in recent weeks and months from more car brands jumping on board the superchargers with J3400 or the NACS connector. I don't, Tom, any more insight on this, Tom, or who you're looking forward to getting some supercharger access next?
Yeah, so I'm thinking about doing a short video on this today, just to make the announcement. And also, it's interesting because there's the adapter there. And when you look at it, and I've looked at the pictures really closely, it is identical in its appearance to the Ford engineered adapter, you know, down to the pin that's used for the top piece, even the side profile. And when you compare it to the Lectron adapter, it's definitely different than the Lectron Vortex. So it almost appears as they've cloned Ford's adapter. So I actually reached out, I sent a bunch of emails out yesterday saying, hey, what's going on with this? Is this, you know, the basically the Ford re-engineered adapter? And Honda said, no, it's not. We get this from GM.
Oh.
So Honda is getting these adapters from GM. Where GM is sourcing them from, it's obviously made by Lectron, because it's very close to the Lectron Vortex. But when you look at all of the aesthetics of it, the locking mechanism on the top is the same as Ford's re-engineered adapter, not the Lectron Vortex adapter. And when you see that lower part, how it comes down sharply, if you look at the Lectron adapter, it's on an angle. You see right here? See this like angle?
Right.
And you see the Ford, it's like a 90 degree drop. This is the Ford adapter. So that adapter actually looks identical to the Ford adapter. I mean, down to the switch, down to these ridges under here, even the pin that's in here is different than the Lectron Vortex adapter. So when I look at it closely, it really looks like the Ford re-engineered adapter, but Lectron and Ford both made it clear to me they own that IP. Nobody else can use it. So unless Ford gave GM permission or sold them to use it. So I'm still trying to get to the bottom of where that adapter was made, who engineered it. It's not Lectron Vortex adapter.
Right.
It clearly isn't. It's very similar, but you know, did GM do the same thing and co-work with Lectron? But Lectron made it really clear to me that nobody can use this IP of Ford's adapter. And Craig just said, is it possible Ford and GM work together on an adapter? It's possible. But then how come that hasn't come out? How come Ford came on an interview with me and proudly talked about how they engineered this adapter? They didn't say, well, you know, we got together with GM or GM chipped in here. It was all Ford, and Ford engineered this, and we had to make to Ford standards. And GM hasn't come out and said, hey, wait a minute. We care about our customers too. So we spent the time to engineer an adapter with Ford and Lectron. That's not the case. So I still don't know where GM's adapters come from. I've sent out emails. I'm going to try to get to the root of this of you know, why does this adapter look exactly like Ford's adapter? And that can't be coincidental. I studied every little corner of it, the ridges, the top piece, even the screws, and it is a clone of Ford's adapter.
Interesting.
Even that locking tab on the top, like I said, they're very similar, Ford and Lectrons, but they're different. And it is the same as the Ford adapter, which is this one here. It's not the same as Lectron's adapter. There's very, very small differences. You'd have to have them side by side to notice it. So I can look at them and then look at the pictures and study them and say everything about it is identical to Ford's adapter.
Right. It's so close to the Lectron. I have an Lectron, what you call Vortex with me here. Yeah. And I can see too, like that little line here on the screen, it's like rounded. On the original Lectron one, it's a square here.
Exactly. So, and like, look at the Ford adapter.
Right. I don't have the Ford adapter.
I'm showing you it.
All right.
It's rounded.
Ah, okay. Let me go full screen. One sec. Sorry, there you go.
See how it's rounded, Dom?
Yeah.
Compared to the Lectron, that's square. Right. Just what you're talking about. That's what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. You'd have to have these side by side. They're so close. You'd have to be able to look at them. And that's what I did. And I looked at all the pictures and I said, every little difference in that picture with the Lectron adapter is the same as the Ford adapter. So you know, I don't understand how it could be the exact adapter if there wasn't some sort of collaboration.
Because when you interviewed, I should have brought this topic up earlier in the podcast. When you interviewed Ford, they would have said, "Oh, we collaborated with GM on, you know, our engineers all got together. There's no point why would we all design our own widgets when the industry needs a widget? So we had our specs, GM had their specs, we all came together. They would have mentioned that. It wouldn't be a secret. There's nothing, you know. Right. So, or GM has put a photocopier on this, which is weird.
Yeah. Well, I've got emails out, and we'll try to get an answer, and I'll make a video on that at some point to explain it. I mean, this is something that a very small subset of people are interested in, but I think the people that are interested in it are very interested in it, like I am, you know. But it's something that the mass public doesn't really care. Just give me a damn adapter so I can charge my car.
Absolutely.
It's safe? Yes? Okay, good. Then give me the adapter. This is really interesting how this whole NACS adapter thing's unfolded over the last year, you know, and we haven't even gotten into really the Kia and Hyundai with the lower amperage ratings and how UL2252 is going to make the companies test the adapters for UL certification, which the funny thing about it is Hyundai and Kia may end up not being wrong with selling the NACS adapter with a lower official amperage rating. I don't want to get into it yet because I'm still doing research on it, but it might be extremely difficult for any of these adapters to be actually UL certified at 500 amps, even though the companies like Ford and Lectron are going to say it's a 500 amp adapter. Right. They may not be able to legally be certified at that 500 amps because of how the testing procedure is going to be done by the standards bodies.
Wow, that's interesting.
Yeah. Snap.
That's kind of wild. If you know, and here I was really criticizing Kia and Hyundai for saying it's only going to be rated at 350 amps, we may end up finding out that all of these adapters officially get a 350 amp rating, even though the manufacturers will say, yeah, but if your EV pulls 500 amps, don't worry about it. It's fine for that. It's going to be able to handle it for a very long period of time. But due to the way UL2252 is being enforced, we couldn't technically say it's a 500 amp adapter. Yeah, that's diving deep into the UL certification and how they're testing these. But we'll see. There's a lot I need to learn about this before I come out and say it officially, even though I just said it, but we'll see soon.
Okay, all right. This is your bedtime reading, isn't it? This is what you do for fun. You're like, get up the certification book.
Yeah,
a couple of chapters before bed. Maybe the Cybertruck engineers need to pick up their book on how to glue bits down, because it's been a bad week for that vehicle. First, Kyle's last functioning motor died, and so you can see that on his channel, and it finally gave up and is in the shop, which is odd to think about because this is the stuff that Tesla do really well, the engineering of electric vehicles. You can, I guess, forgive them a little more in terms of how the Cybertruck is constructed, which is not this kind of bulletproof exoskeleton thing, but bits of the metal are glued on, and it turns out that some of the bits are flying off. Now, this is quite an important bit. It's cosmetic, but they've had to recall every single Cybertruck that has been produced or delivered in the United States. Somebody who has more knowledge of the NHTSA than me, can you let me know? Is it a recall is everything that's been made or sold to a customer? Can you recall a vehicle if it hasn't yet been delivered? I wonder. Anyway, so the number will be near or around every Cybertruck that's been made. So this is a piece of trim that is flying off the vehicles. Hasn't caused any damage that we know about, I don't think, anyway. But the piece of trim is what goes over kind of the driver's door and then onto the back as well. It's a cosmetic piece of trim called a cant rail, by the way, if you're interested. It's comprised of an electrocoated steel stamping joined to a stainless steel panel with structural adhesive. The cant rail assembly is affixed to the vehicle with fasteners on the affected vehicles. The cant rail stainless steel panel is delaminating at the adhesive points, which can cause the panel to separate from the vehicle. So yes, perhaps a little more excusable here. The engineering stuff of like Kyle's Cybertruck braking and motors and that's kind of their thing. That should not be happening. How the vehicle is constructed, that's all new to Tesla, I guess. So they've had to recall all the Cybertrucks. So that number then that they recalled, I did have it down in the notes, 46096. So that is 7,131 more than the last data point we had, which was how many Cybertrucks had been sold cumulatively to the end of 2024. That's registration data. And that was Edmunds stuff, I think, maybe, that number. From end of 2024 to today, 46096, which is another 7,000 in the first 2 months of the year. So, yeah, they're selling about 3,500 of them, which, I don't know, is that good or bad? I'm not sure. Like, it's the number one EV truck in the US, therefore it's good. But it's not the 250,000 that they've got production capacity for. So, a bit of a gap to, I guess, fill up that production line.
Yeah,
but 3,500 seems like okay a month. I mean, monthly Cybertruck sales.
It's just more evidence that 2 million pre-order number—it's kind of vapor, kind of dissipated. You know, we don't know what the actual demand for Cybertruck. I mean, we're looking at what the actual demand for Cybertrucks is right now. It seems like they have plenty of inventory. I don't think they're supply constrained with Cybertruck sales. I mean, right? Yeah, they have plenty. I think they have plenty of Cybertruck supply. From what I can tell, I don't know. Tom?
Yeah. I mean, it's not supply constrained anymore.
Right. I would
not
think
at
so,
all.
You know?
Yeah, no, not at all. And, Elon's, last 6 months of let's say, behavior hasn't helped Cybertruck sales. But he's probably, gotten some more supporters, but there are a lot of people. We talked about this earlier. We're not going to talk about it really in depth now, but there are people right now that would have considered a Tesla before that wouldn't. So that will no longer. So that I think is part of it. There's a lot there's a lot of supply. There's not a lot of demand for Cybertruck right now. Maybe when they come out with the rear wheel version, that's going to drop the price down to what is it, like 61,000 or something?
Okay, what it's going to be.
The rear wheel drive version is going to be that, but if those numbers are correct, with regards to 7,000 or so far sold in 2025, that's bad. That's really low
That's 30. That's mid 30, and you can't really take January and February sales because the auto industry has different sales amounts. But it is a new vehicle, so it should be selling well. But if you annualize that, just play the game of annualizing that, it would be mid 30s or low 30s, depending on how you look at it, in terms of how many Cybertrucks they're making in 2025, which has a couple of issues. Firstly, obviously, they've spent billions on a production line for 250,000 vehicles a year. That's in the automotive industry, that's kind of your kryptonite, really. You don't want unused capacity, so that's going to really hurt them. But on the other hand, 3,500 of that vehicle, which I think is, it's not for everybody. It is loved by a lot of the people who own one already, but it's not a mass market thing, as maybe they were trying to, assume that it would become. I think 3,500 a month is probably a good number. Would that still make it the number one electric truck in the United States?
It's possible. It'll be close.
Yeah. It's there or thereabouts.
But it was supposed to be this was the latest truck that came out. And such a built up hype. I mean, if there wasn't all the hype, maybe we might be looking at it in a different light and saying, hey, Cybertruck's not selling that bad. It's number one selling electric truck. But since it was a foregone conclusion that they were going to sell everyone that they could make for the first 3 or 4 years, Cybertruck capacity was sold out for 3 years, that anything less than that was a disappointment, and this is a massive disappointment as far as what was predicted compared to what we what we're seeing. I mean, it's you know, the vehicle's been out how long now? How when did they over start selling? Is it over a year now?
Over a year, yeah. I believe I think Kyle got his before last Christmas, right?
Yeah, it must be over a year.
Is it over a year?
Yeah,
I think I don't remember.
They started delivering at the end of 23, didn't they? Yeah.
Yeah. So over a year now, and what was the number recalled, Martin? 46
and change. Yeah, forty six oh nine six. Yeah.
So it's less than 4,000 units a month.
Okay. Yeah.
Since it launched.
Yeah.
And compared to what they're talking about, hundreds and hundreds of thousands of them. It's a disaster, sales wise. Mm. As far as if you compare with any other Tesla that was launched, you know. Any other Tesla, they had huge supply problems with every single Tesla that was made, and this on is the complete other hand. So
I was
staying on the Tesla topic really quick. Model Y, if somebody in the comment stream, and judging by the comments, there probably isn't, but if there's someone in the comment stream that is interested in a Model Y. Now that the refresh is out, you know, that's the soup du jour, but Tesla still has a bunch of the older ones left. And I went and looked yesterday at their inventory, Model Y inventory, and you could get a Model Y Performance with under $1,000 for like $37,000.
Wow. There's nothing wrong with the old one.
There's like 10 of them. Listed at the top, and that's the performance version with like white leather with like 500 miles for like $36,000-$37,000. There's like 10 or a dozen of them. I mean, think about that, brand new. That's including, you know, the tax incentive, but a brand new Model Y Performance for the price of the price of basically an Equinox, which I love the Equinox. I have an Equinox. But, you know, a Model Y Performance is a different league. It's in a different category. If you're thinking about a Model Y, look at the prices now on their inventory cars. They're just crazy. And that's Performance. Martin just put one up. Yeah.
This is a demo vehicle with 130 miles. So it's a new car. Never been driven. And, wow, that's incredible value.
That's like a $60,000 car, right? Normally, I mean, what?
This is like
after the $7,500
after. Yeah,
yeah. Okay. Yeah. This is a really
they bake that into it. Yeah,
just talking about this, it's a really interesting phenomenon, which I don't think I've ever really thought through. So I probably won't do the thinking out loud while we're live for fear of looking like more of an idiot than people think I already am. But the new pricing affects the used car pricing so much in terms of residuals and depreciation on the car that Tesla have to shift these. But if you have a Model Y or any Tesla, the depreciation that you are going to have, you are going to be underwater on your finance agreement. And that, I was about to change my iPhone 13. Because it's a couple of years old now. I was looking on eBay. These still get mega, mega money. Now, obviously not as much as a new one, but I'll sell this because I don't have a phone contract. So I'll sell my Apple thing and get a whatever the current one is. And then the offset between them won't be huge because this Apple thing, however Apple do their marketing or their new car pricing, I'm not an expert on markets. I don't understand the economics of it. But for some reason, this Apple phone, 2 years old, well used, is still worth a ton of money, and then I'll go buy the new one. I'll chuck in a couple of hundred quid and get the brand new one. But it's different with cars. It's different with Tesla in the last couple of years. That in order to carry on selling a lot of vehicles, they've had to reduce the prices. But then that absolutely kills the used car market. And it's different because Teslas were meant to be like iPhones on wheels, but they're not. They are more like cars and traditional depreciation. So, like, that's a mega deal if you go buy it. But if you own one already, I'd be, gutted. And that probably comes full circle on what we were just talking about, which is the Cybertruck story, which is what is the price at which another 100,000 people go and buy a Cybertruck? Because, you know, whatever the price of it is at the minute, because didn't some of the last year, 2025 gets the federal tax credit. Yes, the Cyber, they've still got 24 model year Cybertrucks in inventory, which they can't sell, but they, yeah. And so, like, they need to reduce the price of the Cybertruck or have a rear-wheel drive version that is priced in a way in which a lot of people go, ah, now I'll get a Cybertruck. And only Tesla will know with, you know, testing that number, where that number lands. But then that just, man, it's just like, if you buy any, not an EV, but you buy a Tesla, like, how do you know what it's going to be worth in 3 years' time? If you're a leasing company, if you're a, you know, a Hertz or a rental company, like, this deal that Tom showed is incredible, but it just scares the life out of me of, like, what does it do to residuals and, you know, any business, including Tesla, that has lease cars on their books. But if you're a leasing company, finance company, you carry this as a, as an asset, you've then got to account for that. Like, oh man, scares the life out of me. So, but awesome. Awesome if you're going to go buy one as a private individual.
Yeah. And there's a bunch of them in their inventory. Ooh. You know, the wow. different colors, the midnight silver, they have the, you know, I was looking at the silver with the white interior and I'm like, you know, you could buy this, pay the $8,000 for the full self-driving. And it's like,
wow,
in the low 40s, you know, for a brand new Model Y performance with options and full self-driving for like, you know, 43,000, 44,000. That's nuts. You know,
now that is brilliant.
And the full self-driving option will help with the resale value down the road. Cause if you look at the used Teslas, when they have that, they sell for significantly more than the ones that don't have it. So, but anyway, I'm not getting one, but I just looked at it and I'm like, that value, like, that's fantastic. It, you know, if my Equinox was totaled, which it's not, they're saying now at least another 2 weeks for some more of the suspension parts that's getting fixed. If it was totaled, it'd be something that I'd be considering.
I'm going to remove that from the screen. I think it's when we're both screen sharing that there might be an issue, Dom. And also, I think that's what made my feed crash, and I was trying to do a screen share before. So I'm going to take mine off completely and close down Brave browser and then let you share what you were just sharing, because I could hear it. I'm not sure anyone could see.
I have
that image.
Video of my Equinox getting hit.
Ooh, man, look at that.
So I got it from a security camera at the coffee shop that I was at. Oh, no, that's at the end.
Let's go back a bit, Dom.
Yeah, let's go. Here's the beginning right here.
So your Equinox is there.
There's my Equinox parked on the side of the road. And now I stop it again. That's the car that hit me. Watch that minivan, a Chrysler Pacifica.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and that was a police officer sitting in his car. He watched. He turned, and I know him. He turns around, he walks inside the coffee shop. He goes, "Tom, that's your black Equinox, right?" I said, "Yeah." He goes, "Come on out."
Oh, no.
And then he like just closed the road. Yeah, you see it there?
Yeah.
Dom, put the sound on it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, because you can hear it.
Everything's quiet until it hits.
Let's have a listen.
And look how much farther it gets pushed forward, the car.
So, yeah, see the car's location. Oh, I hate that noise.
Yeah, and he was tailgating the car in front of him. If you notice, that's partially probably why he didn't see it, because he probably was tailgating. So now his view is obstructed, and then he looks down for a minute on his phone or something, and all of a sudden, boom. Yeah. That's what happened.
And then you hear his engine rev afterwards as well. I think the sound isn't on now, but you hear him hard rev on his engine at the end. So he's obviously surprised and stuff. But
yeah, people ask me, why didn't he did he drive away? Well, number one, there was a police officer right there, but number two, his front right wheel was perpendicular to the vehicle. At this point, it was just torn. It was held on by like one of the control arms, but it was that thing wasn't going anywhere. It's hard to tell, but that right side of the vehicle is lower to the ground than this side, but it's tough. And I got a BMW i3 in blue on camera driving by. Those
Look
are
at that.
That was a good catch, you know.
I don't know if I've ever seen one of these in blue before on the
streets.
Oh,
sure you have, Dom. That was a popular color when it first came out.
I mean, in Florida, they're all white or black.
But that was a popular color when it first came out.
Yeah, wow. It gets hot here, so people like white cars.
Yeah.
Matt. Yeah. So it's been in the shop now for 5 weeks, and we still don't have all the parts. So it's it took a good hit. And as you could see, it moved it up about 2 feet. So the whole rear suspension, all the parts in there have to be replaced. Besides the quarter panel had to be, replaced and painted, and the rear bumper skin needed a new plastic bumper cover.
That's horrible.
So it's a good, it was a good hit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Urban Strink is asking if there's any new news on Neo Firefly. It's not really, aside from, CTL and Neo working on a battery standard for swapping for the Firefly line and other lines.
Mm-hmm. Hey, thank you for your comments this week. Always really appreciate it, and love to see you guys joining in. You are the fourth presenter of this show. You guys in the comments, it's so wonderful to see what's on your mind each week, and it's a good way to take the temperature of the room as well, and see what's on your mind, and what you want us to talk about as well. So thank you so much. You can stay in touch, of course, during the week by leaving a comment. If you don't catch the live show, which is 9:30 Eastern, when do my clocks change? Last Sunday of March, so I got one more week of this being 1:30 in the afternoon UK, and then our clocks over here change a few weeks after yours, but yeah, always at that time Eastern US. If you don't catch it live, leave a comment either on our social medias and things like that, or below on the YouTube video if that's the way that you are watching it. You can subscribe to the channel, and that helps. It means you won't miss a show. But what matters more these days is that you hit the like button or leave a comment as well. But just by hitting that little thumbs up actually makes a really big difference to YouTube recommending this to other people as well. And it's great to see the podcast growing recently as well. Thank you so much. Questions, comments, leave them below and give us a thumbs up. And you can always hit subscribe. The audio version is on all the usual places where you get audio podcasts, like the Apples and Spotify's of the world. We'll call it a day. Done an hour and a half. Another one in the books. Thank you guys for taking part. And we will catch you on... Martin.
If anybody here is in Florida or planning on being there tomorrow near the Orlando area, the first Electrify Expo is happening. Event
yes.
Tomorrow. Starting at, I believe, 10, unless you have special tickets. And I'll be there. I'm going to drive some electric motorcycles, hopefully Lucid and maybe F-150 Lightning. We'll see. And I'll make some videos of the thing as well. I think I have one for my personal channel. I'll do like a walkthrough of it. But then I'll do for Batteries Included some midweek episodes of the different, driving them and then talking to the people from the companies besides the interviewing and seeing, their marketing strategy or whatever, comes up in the conversation. So if you're there tomorrow, say hi. And if you want to learn more about the Electrify Expo, we did have an episode from last week, I believe. We talked with BJ Burtwell, who is the co-founder and organizer of and CEO of the whole Electrify Expo extravaganza. And that's, if you want to learn more about what's going on, I think it's a pretty good interview as well. If you into midweek interviews, we spoke with Recurrent Auto this week, and that was actually pretty good. I don't know if everyone's seen this yet, but Recurrent gives you battery health ratings. They monitor your battery health, so you can sign up with them. They can monitor your car's battery health, but they also give ratings on platforms like cars.com, so you can tell what the potential state of health is for a car that you're interested in is. And so, watch that episode and see how they do that, because I didn't know. So that's why I asked them to come on, and now I know, and you can listen to the episode and you'll know too.
If you are going along to Electrify Expo in Florida, then go do some celeb spotting, go meet Dom. And just don't look at him directly in the eyes. He doesn't like that. He's very particular. He's very, very famous. Just please avert your gaze. If you are going to go get a signature or a selfie or something, he doesn't like that. Okay. Exactly. Hollywood A-listers, Dom, pretty much the same, basically.
And if you give him a bag full of green M&Ms, you have to pick out all the other colors.
Yeah.
Just green M&Ms, then he'll talk to you for a while.
You guys don't realize Dom has a rider for this show, right? We have to make sure his dressing room has got all the right stuff in. Otherwise, man, his temper tantrums are off the charts. We better go. Thanks for watching. Hey, Dom, say ciao.
Ciao.